Proverbs 29, verse 18, where there is no vision, the people perish, but he that keepeth the law is happy. I first came across this verse about 35 years ago. Brother Mike Rogers and I embraced this as our theme when we were ordained, and we actually had some t-shirts made, and we put this verse on the back of the t-shirts: where there is no vision, the people perish. We were young back then, in our 30s. Brother Mike was in his 20s. I asked him the other day, I said, do you still have this t-shirt that we both had duplicate? He and Sister Lori and I, all three, had these t-shirts that we actually wore them to the beach. And I said, do you still have your visionary t-shirt? On the front it said visionary. On the back it was Proverbs 29:18, where there is no vision, the people perish. He said, what do you mean? Do I still have my visionary t-shirts? He said, if I wore that today, I would get arrested for indecent exposure. Some things change over 30 years. The Lord is the one that gives a vision. The Lord is the one that gives a vision to the church, to the people, to individuals. The Lord is the one that blesses with that. I remember when I was ordained, Brother Mike and I thought we were going to come out and change the world. And we just had the world ahead of us and thought that things were just going to, it was just going to change the world. The Lord is the one that blesses us with a vision. I had breakfast with my doctor the other day. In addition to seeing my doctor, I had breakfast with him afterwards. And in our conversation, he kept saying that the Lord had spoken to him. And so finally I asked him, I said, how is it that God speaks to you? How is it that God speaks to you? And so we began to talk about that just a little bit more in detail. And in the scriptures and individually and personally, oftentimes God speaks to us through impressions. And that's one of the things that he mentioned, that God speaks through impressions. I have personally not heard the audible voice of God, but I have had impressions so strong that I felt like that I almost heard the voice of God, that it was so very strong. I began to have reflected over the past few weeks about the blessings of Mount Carmel and had a conversation with Elder Bradley. And he said, Mount Carmel has experienced so many blessings. And I'm going to touch on some of those that are special to me, and I trust that they are to you as well. And one of those blessings is about how that God spoke to me. Now, there's a lot of things in my life that I have doubted. I imagine you probably have some doubts. I doubt that Brother John's figured everything out. You can ask his wife, and she might enlighten us on that. But I doubt there's any of us here that's figured everything out. And sometimes we are uncertain about things, but sometimes we're completely certain about things. And one thing that I was completely certain about, that God made it clear in my mind, was that he was leading me to Pastor Mount Carmel. And he spoke to me. Not in an audible voice, but I'll tell you how he spoke to me. I was about 28. And to kind of tell you how that God led up to this, I was 28 years old, and one evening I was painting my grandfather's kitchen. And while I was painting, I was listening to a preaching tape. I ordered the tapes from the Cincinnati Annual Meeting and from Brother Bradley. And so I was listening to this preaching tape, and I was about 28 years old, never heard of Mount Carmel before, never heard of Elder Tillman, anyone at all affiliated with Mount Carmel. And so this preaching tape was from an annual meeting at Cincinnati. And this preaching tape was, the preacher on it was Elder Tillman. Everybody here knows that Elder Tillman was the pastor here at Mount Carmel for 10 or 12 years in between Preacher Thompson and myself. And Elder Tillman at the time was the pastor here at Mount Carmel. And he was preaching this message about how that God brought him up from another order, I think maybe he was from the Episcopal Church, I believe. And he was sharing his testimony on this preaching tape. He was talking about how that God had, they lived in this area. They lived in Pennsylvania, I believe. And how that he had begun to study the doctrines of grace. He began to study the scriptures. And in studying the scriptures, that God began to show him the truth of the doctrines of grace. That God began to make it so clear in his mind. And he had relatives in North Carolina, I think his parents or grandparents, that he would go back and visit. And I remember hearing this on the tape. And how that God led him from studying to understand the doctrines of grace. And Sister Anita and Sister Peggy can correct me on some of this if I'm wrong, if I get the details incorrect. But he was led by the Lord to understand the doctrines of grace. And so his family told him that there is a church that believes what you are embracing now. They found it. And it was about an hour away from where he lived, from what I remember on the tape. And he said that he went to the church and he visited, and the preacher that was there was an old man. And he went and told his family, he said, I probably won't go back. The preacher is, I think he was up in his 80s. It was Susan's grandfather, Elder Thompson. And his family told him, says, you keep going. Because if that church believes the doctrines of grace that God has led you in this journey to embrace, you need to keep going and you need to keep attending. Well, the Lord began to work on him. And ultimately, Elder Tillman ended up being called to preach the gospel and pastor the church after Elder Thompson became feeble and then passed away. And I can remember listening to that tape while I'm painting the kitchen, and I was so moved by it that God would take somebody and lead them on that journey, and they would ultimately end up pastoring the church that they'd visited that they weren't going to go back to because the preacher was an old man. So that stuck in my mind. Still didn't know anything about Mount Carmel. I was about 28, 29. And then I began to come up on my 30th birthday. And I don't know about you all, but I had been told that when you turn 30, it's going to be a really difficult time. My goodness, what I'd give to turn the clock back to 30 now. How about you? Now, when I go through the security at the airport, they've got to where almost every time they ask me if I have any metal in me. Metal hips, metal knees, things like that. And I asked them the last time, I said, do I look like I need some metal in me? No, I don't have metal. Maybe pretty soon, but some things have changed. But when I turned 30, I thought, you know what? I'm going to make the best of it. I am. I thought, there's two things that I'd like to do on my 30th birthday, and if I could do one of them, then that would be a real blessing. And so I got the Baptist Witness, and the two things that I wanted to do was go visit my mother on my 30th birthday, or go hear Brother Bradley preach if there was a meeting that he was preaching somewhere. And so my parents lived in Virginia, just out of D.C., and I'd never heard of Mount Carmel, but in reading this article of Brother Bradley's preaching announcements, he was preaching on November the 17th, 1990, my 30th birthday, at Mount Carmel Primitive Baptist Church. So I booked a ticket to go visit my mother, and then I came to the annual meeting here that you had, where Brother Bradley was preaching, and I came several nights. And the church was faced differently. The pulpit was over here. The seats were lined up this way. And I remember just enjoying Brother Bradley's preaching. I enjoyed it. It was a great blessing. Enjoyed getting to visit my mom. And I have good memories of my 30th birthday. That was the real blessing, to be able to come to church here, visit Brother Bradley, hear him preach, and visit my mother. So I left and had that special memory of the Lord blessing on my 30th birthday. And then I came back to Maryland, or to Virginia, to visit my mother either on her birthday in February or Mother's Day. I can't remember which it was. But I called Elder Compton, who was pastoring at Columbia Church at the time. And I asked him, I said, are you going to be at Columbia? I was not ordained at the time, was exercising, still had not been ordained, was filling appointments around in the West Texas area. And I asked Elder Compton, I said, are you going to be at Columbia? I want to come to church and hear you preach. And he said, well, I'm not going to be there this Sunday. He said, I'm actually preaching up at Mount Carmel Church. He said, in Bel Air, Maryland. I said, oh yeah, I've been there. I enjoyed it back on my birthday. And he said, I'll miss seeing you. But he said, in fact, if you'd fill the appointment at Columbia, I'd appreciate it. And I hung up the phone, and about 10 minutes later, the phone rang again, and it was Elder Compton. And this is how God speaks to you. I believe he spoke to Elder Compton. He said, on second thought, he said, would you mind going up to Mount Carmel? He said, they're without a pastor. I think they might enjoy you coming up, and you might enjoy going up there and being with them. Would you go up and fill that appointment, and I'll stay at Columbia? And I said, sure, I'll go up. And so that was my next time to come, and they asked me to preach. And I don't know that I was ordained. It was about the time I was just about to get ordained or right before, but it was in that period of time, but I filled the appointment. And then they asked me to come back, and they asked me to come back again and again. And then they asked me to preach a weekend meeting. And then they asked me if I would consider pastoring the church. I'd been ordained during this time. They said, would you consider pastoring the church? Now, there was a visiting preacher that was here before I came, and this particular visiting preacher, Brother Malcolm, went up to him. And he said, after I'd preached up here for maybe several months and several times on the weekends, visited in the homes and different things like that, Brother Malcolm asked him, he said, now, we're not asking Brother Stephen to pastor the church, but if we did, do you think he would? Now, that's how Brother Malcolm said it. And this preacher that he asked it to ask him to, he said, well, that's just about like asking somebody to marry you. Say, I'm not asking you to marry me, but if I did, would you? He said, if you want him to pastor the church, call him. And if you don't, don't. But he said, that's just about like asking somebody to marry you. Say, I'm not asking you, but if I did, would you? He said, that's about the same approach. So after they asked me, they told me that they had been praying about it for 30 days. And I said, well, I'm going to have to ask you to pray about it for 30 more days, because I said, I don't have a clear direction on this. And I said, I love the folks there. I thought I would grow up and live and die and be buried in West Texas, and that's where I would be the rest of my life. But I said, I do want to be mindful of what the Lord has in store and if the Lord's in the matter. So I said, pray about it for 30 days. So here's another way that God spoke to me. I was reading. I was seeking the direction of the Lord. I visited in the homes up here. Your grandmother, Luke, they invited me to their home. I stayed with them. Brother John, Sister Rebecca, Roy and Seal, Don and Jane, all Ors and Felicia, just had a wonderful time. And the folks came together, and they were special, special times. But here's how the Lord speaks to you. I was praying about it. Lord, would you make it plain? Would you make it just as plain as it can be? And I was reading in this portion of Scripture. This is how God spoke to me. In Acts chapter 16, Paul has a vision, and in the vision, he's been bidden to go to Macedonia, and it says, and this is what it said, come over into Macedonia and help us. And I'm telling you, when I read that portion of Scripture, it jumped off the page. I use a yellow highlighter for stuff that's really important. If it's really important, I'll highlight it in yellow, then I'll underline it in blue, and I'll put a star by it. And if it's super important, I'll put two or three stars by it. That's how I am. I'm OCD, and it helps me to stay focused, and so to do those little things, and that helps. But that portion where it said, come over and help us, just absolutely jumped off the page. So I knew at that point that God was dealing with me. But I'd asked the Lord to make it plain, make it plain. I'd just been here preaching. I'd gone back home. I'd stopped and visited Elder Walter Evans in North Carolina. His daughter, Sister Ann Petty, was a member here, and her husband, Von Petty. And I get home. I just read this verse. Just read this verse, and this is how God speaks to me. I'd read this verse where it said, "Come over and help us." It was on my heart. And the telephone rings. And I picked up the phone, and it was Brother Von Petty, Sister Kathy Parker's dad. And this is what he said. He said, "I'm not a deacon or anything like that. But," he said, "I just felt impressed to call you and say, would you come help us?" And I had to take it serious when that happened, because I thought, I hadn't talked to him. I knew that it had to be the Lord that was in the matter, working on both ends at the same time. So I had to seriously consider it at that point. I'd already been seriously considering it, but I thought, Lord's working in the matter here. Here's how the Lord speaks to me. So then I come back another time, and Steve and Kathy Parker invited a lot of the church, probably Sister Peggy was there, Brother Tom, over to their house in Delaware. And we get to their house in Delaware, and they had a cake. And they could say anything in the world on this cake. Welcome, happy birthday, all the things that you say on a cake. And on that cake, it had this verse, "Come, help us." Now, we hadn't been talking. The only common denominator between all those folks and myself was the Lord. But that's how the Lord speaks. That's how he speaks to me. So the Lord made it to where I felt more at home here than I actually felt at home in Texas. That's how the Lord is when he's working in the matter. I've told Brother John that. We've talked about this. Brother Asa, different ones. So I ended up moving to Maryland. I had a U-Haul truck, had a vehicle and $10,000, and a franchise to Subway Sandwich Shop. And that's what I came to Maryland with. And when I got to Maryland and began to pastor the church, I was here 6 months. I remember this very specifically. 6 months, we had wonderful meetings, special times. But I was called to the hospital. We hadn't had anybody baptized, anyone join. I was called to the hospital to Sister Polly Edwards. She is 96 years old. I knew her. I'd visited with her before. And I went up to the bedside of Sister Polly, and she said, "Elder Bloyd, would you preach my funeral?" Now, she got over that, and she got out of the hospital and lived a while longer. But at that time, she wanted me to preach her funeral. And of course, I would preach her funeral. I'd be happy to preach her funeral. And it was a blessing. But I remember thinking, when she said that, I'd been here 6 months. Nobody had joined. No one had been baptized. Not any letters that were moved. And I remember thinking in my mind, I sure do hope that God didn't bring me up here to bury all these folks. I hope that he begins to add to the church. I mean, don't get me wrong. I feel like God blesses in doing funerals. I don't say I love doing funerals. I love to encourage the Lord's people in funerals. But it's a sad time, and I understand that. But I want to use the verses that God gives to encourage the Lord's people. And I love that when God blesses, to be able to encourage people with his word in funerals. Right after that, after Sister Polly said that, the floodgates opened. I know some of you remember that. The first year, if I'm not mistaken, we had 20 or 21 that were baptized. I mean, every week we were headed to Deer Creek. We didn't have a baptistry at that time. I didn't know that that had been an issue of discord, putting a baptistry in. They asked me if I was, that's one of the things that the deacons asked me when I was being considered as pastor, was I for or against having a baptistry in the church? I didn't know. I said, well, where I came up, we didn't have rivers and lakes and creeks and baptistries. All I knew about. I didn't know you could baptize any place but a baptistry. And there were some that said, well, you got to have running water. Brother Sonny Powell said, I can take care of that. He says, turn on the spigot and open the drain. And he says, you've got running water in the baptistry. So I'm glad that we've come a little bit farther down the road than that. My granddad said he remembered when churches would divide over where they put electricity in the church. Nobody ever had it in their house, so why would you put it in the church? And the Lord is going to be the light of the word, is what they would say. And others would argue about whether to put insurance on the building. Well, the Lord's going to take care of the building. Sometimes the Lord gives us a mind to make decisions that we need to consider as well. But we were going to the creek and we were baptizing. All of those were special, special times. Almost every week or two, it seemed like, that we were going to the creek. I remember one time we had all the folks waiting at the creek, and I went to change clothes at somebody's house and locked the keys in the car. Everybody's waiting at the creek, and here I am at somebody's house, and I think Jim and Jeannie came and picked me up and rescued me and took me to the river, and I mean, we pulled in there and ran into the river and did the baptism, but the folks have been waiting patiently for a long, long time. Those were special times, adding those folks through baptisms. I remember all the young folks that God blessed us with, the young families. Wrote some of them down, won't get all of them, but these were really, really special. Back to the baptistry. Brother Cook, I remember this so well that I think it was your dad that we were baptizing, but I'll never forget. Your mom had gone home and got a towel, and I remember looking up at Deer Creek. We were down in the water, and Sister Virginia had been talking about being baptized, but she never had come forward to do it. But I remember standing in the water and looking up out of the river, and she was on the top of the bridge. There's a bridge going across, and I remember she was up there, and she had her towel draped over her arm. And I knew then that God had been working on her, and she's ready to be baptized. Those were special times. But I remember then the Lord just added so much to the church. I remember that Mike and Peggy Stewart moved up here and began to have their families, children. Then Brother Cook and his family came, and he called and talked to Brother Jackson. It was his first one that he talked to when he called. And Brother Jackson began to share about the doctrines of grace. And Brother Jackson was the perfect one. Do you know, we had just put a phone line in when that happened. And that itself was a little bit of an issue. Some said, we've never had a phone here. And others said, well, I've got a phone out in the car. Anybody wants to use it? And back then, it was a big box phone, bigger than a shoebox. And Brother Malcolm, bless his heart, he said, anybody can use my phone. They can go out to the car and use the phone. I don't know that we need a phone in the church. And that was a big deal to put a phone in here at the church. And we put one in at the church. And then just a week or two after that, Brother Cook called. And I thought, you know what? The Lord's in the matter on that. If that's the only good we ever got out of our phone, then that was a blessing. And so thankful for that. But the Lord began to add to the church the Stewart family. Brother Mike was considering coming up here. The Lord spoke in that as well from Arkansas. And he had been struggling about whether to move or not to Washington, D.C. and found that this was the closest church. They had visited here one time. And I felt impressed to call them and invite them to come and to consider moving up here. And when I called them, he told me, he said, you won't believe this, but Peggy and I were just talking about and just praying about whether or not we're supposed to go to Maryland and make that move. And he said that helped in them deciding to move up here. The Stewarts, the Cooks, the Huffmans, the Humes, the Cliffs, the Bartibals, the Plumbers, the Franklins, and there's probably many, many more in those early days that I overlooked. But those were special times. They all had a bunch of kids, just like the Carneys and the Clarks and the Mosleys do now. And those were special times. We had at that time, one of the ministries that we had was a nursing home ministry. We'd go to Citizens maybe once or twice a month. And we'd go to the one in Forest Hill once a month. And sometimes we'd go to other homes. And we'd gather there on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and we would go and sing from room to room all the people that were in the nursing home, and we'd try to minister to them. And it was a blessing to us, and sometimes I think it was a blessing to them. I remember one room we went to, a lot of folks were already in bed, and some of them probably never got out of bed, and we were so excited to be able to go from room to room and sing. And one that we went to, we were singing, and the lady had the covers up right here, and as soon as we started singing, she took the covers and pulled them up over her head. She wasn't enjoying it near as much as we were, but it was a blessing. But all of those times, we never had anybody come to Mount Carmel from going to the nursing home and singing directly. But indirectly, God began to send folks just like the Epins that came here on a snowy day when we almost didn't have church. And when I think his brother, Sister Tracy's that said, or Brother Justice, I get it mixed up. When they saw the sign that said Primitive Baptist, Brother Justice said, "What does that mean?" And Sister Tracy said, "I don't know, but I like primitive things." Well, they're here now, and God led them. What a blessing that was, and how that it happened that way. Those were special times with the young families, and but what I was going to say is during that time when we had the nursing home ministry, even though God did not directly add folks to the church through the nursing home, he began to add folks to the church other ways. People would just show up, like the Epins. Maybe you came as a result of our nursing home ministry. Who knows how God led you here? But God does it in such a way that he gets the glory. If we had started having visitors come as a result of going to the nursing home, then we would have thought that we needed to get the glory. But God began to send folks other ways in such a way that he gets all of the glory. Right after that, this is the one element that I was so totally confused about in moving to Maryland. I had just moved my elderly grandparents to Lubbock, and we were super close. And then the Lord called me to come here, and then shortly after coming, my grandfather, who I thought would live to be 100, passed away. My grandmother had had a stroke, and I brought her up here to stay for 1 month. And I realized that, and to look back, you can see how God was working through it, and God worked things out. But I didn't know how that this was going to work out. I brought her to stay a month, and I realized that there was no way that I could take her back home and that she could live by herself. And her kids had told me that if she couldn't, when she went home, if she couldn't live by herself, that the nursing home was where she was going to be. And that was her situation. My grandparents had always been a blessing to me. And so I asked my grandmother. She'd had a stroke. The doctors told us that she had about 6 months to live. She had stroke, heart trouble, and cancer. And I asked the doctor, I asked my grandmother, "Would you want to go back and stay?" I took her home and knew she couldn't stay there. I knew what her situation was going to be. And within a few days, my family sold her belongings, sold her house. We loaded up her car and everything that we could get in her car and moved her to Maryland. I had no idea what I was getting involved in, and she didn't either. She ended up living 8.5 years, was told she'd have 6 months to live. She lived 8.5 years. The last 2 years, she was a complete invalid. You know, you saw her. Many of you cared for her. Sister Peggy did. Sister Julie did. Sister Ellen did. Sister Chrissy did. Different ones helped, and they were a blessing. And I was able to keep her at home. Sister Dolan, who was older than my grandmother, she was in her 90s, caring for my grandmother. But it was such a blessing. But the last 2 years, she was a complete invalid. She couldn't feed herself. You could have offered her $1 million, and she couldn't have turned over in bed. She didn't have the ability. So you can imagine the difficulty that it was for her and for me. But at the end of the day, when the Lord took her home, I thought, the one thing that I wish is that I had one more day to take care of her. That's how God does it when he works in your life. So she passed away. I'll always be thankful for your help, Sister Peggy, Sister Julie, the different ones that helped so much care for her. And then right after that, just a few months after that, Elder Compton. Andy and Anna had been caring for Elder Compton after Sister Compton passed away. They'd been married 76 years. And Elder Compton was alone, and Andy and Anna were nervous about taking care of him. And one of the things, Brother Compton had always been a vegetarian by choice. And so we went to Cracker Barrel, and they were nervous about being with him, nervous about being around him. And so the waitress comes along, and they knew that he was very picky on his eating, very simple on his eating, not picky, simple on his eating. And the waitress takes the order, and she says, "Well, what would you like?" And ask Elder Compton. He says, "I want a barbecue sandwich with French fries." And Sister Anna looked at me, and she said, "Well, I thought he was a vegetarian." I said, "Well, he's just changing." But they took care of him in his home for a couple of years, and then he came to stay with me for 2 weeks. And he ended up staying for 2 years. And it was a wonderful blessing, or at least a year and a half before the Lord took him home. During that time, Luke, I'll always be thankful your grandmother took care of him, your mom, Sister Chrissy, you did, your whole family. Brother Asa and Sister Carla met under those circumstances. Asa came up to help take care of Brother Compton. Asa was helping me with some personal care with Brother Compton. We had him stood up, and we were helping him bathe him, and Brother Asa said, "I have to just tell you, I'm just not completely comfortable with this." And I said, "Well, you'll get comfortable." You know, he came up to help, and I appreciated him doing that. But it was such a blessing. And Brother Compton blessed our lives in so many, many ways. He did. I remember one of the exciting times through the years for me and for others have been the babies, when folks have babies. That's been such a blessing. To get called to the hospital and Calvin and Elsa, I remember the first time I came to the hospital when Camden was born, and Calvin was in there, and I was talking to the grandparents, and I was so excited. I said, "Camden, is that an old family name?" And I believe it was your dad. He says, "No." He says, "Don't you know? Aren't you aware? Camden Yards is right down the road here." I said, "You mean she's named after Camden Yards?" But special times, and used to when they'd have newborn babies, they would come to church, that I sort of continued the tradition that Elder Thompson did. I would meet them outside and then carry the children through the first time that they came into the doors of the church. And those were special, special, special times. Special times. We've had a good many weddings, and they were such a blessing. We've had a lot of funerals. And I have to tell you that the funerals were a blessing as well, that to be able to take God's word and to encourage God's people. Sister Jeanette's was such a blessing with her family here, and I believe that they were blessed in having their mother here once again at Mount Carmel, and that was truly a blessing. I've been with a lot of the folks when they passed away. I'll never forget Frank Rogers. He had been, I hope I say this right, needing to die for several days. Those that were around him would just encourage him to keep on breathing and keep on living. And I went to see him at the Havre de Grace Hospital, and I parked out front. They just closed that hospital the other day, but I parked out front in a no parking zone. I had my grandmother in there, and I told him at the front desk, "Would you just kind of keep your eyes on her? I'm just going to run up and have prayer with this brother that's in bad shape." And I parked her in the front, and I ran up to, in a no parking zone, I ran up to have prayer with Brother Frank, and while I was there, it's the first time that nobody was in the room with him. And I began to talk to him, and I told him, I said, "Brother Frank," I said, "you've struggled." I said, "It's okay to go on and be with the Lord." And I began in my feeble way to sing, "Take My Hand, Precious Lord, Lead Me On," had prayer with him, and as I was singing the song, that little beat just went less and less and less, and pretty soon it was just a straight line. And I was there holding his hand when he went home to be with the Lord. I remember Brother Von Petty, when we went up to Kathy and Steve's, or Sister Ann's, I believe it was, and when we went in to visit him, I knew that he was about to pass away. And I'd carried a van load of folks up there, and I thought, what am I going to do? We sang a couple of songs, and I told him, I said, "Y'all go on. going home. I didn't have a vehicle. Somebody took me home. I don't even know how I got home. I don't even know. But they went on home, and I was there, and within 35 minutes, Brother Von Petty went home to be with the Lord. I always wondered what it would be like to be with somebody when they went home to be with the Lord. But I have to tell you the feeling that I get. It's different for others. I have to tell you, I'm just kind of jealous. Because I know what they're about to experience. I know what they're about to see. I know that they're not going to be dealing with this world anymore, and the sadness and the sorrow and sin and trouble. And they're ready to go on and be with the Lord. And I have to tell you, I'm just a little bit jealous because of what they're going to experience. And when they breathe their last breath, I was with Brother Compton when the Lord took him home. He hadn't communicated with us for days. And I was talking to him, and I'll never forget, this was just as profound as it could be. That morning I woke up and I walked in and I held his hand, and all of a sudden a big smile came. He opened his eyes and he looked at me, and a big smile came over his face. And I have to tell you, I thought, he sees me. And then I thought to myself, he's not seeing me. He's seeing way past me. He's seeing up into glory, into heaven. And the Lord took him on home to be with him. I have to say, I'm jealous for those that get to go and be with the Lord. I long for that time when I can be with my Savior. Those have been great blessings. We have had some fun times. Anybody remember the ski trips that we took? Took me over here to Round Top. I grew up in West Texas, and we'd gone to New Mexico, where they have really high mountains, 12,000 plus feet mountains. And I get there, and they said, well, we're here. And I said, well, where's the mountain? And it was just this little incline of a hill. And I said, we're going to ski here? But they were fun times. We went skiing. We went to the Right to Life marches. We traveled to Texas, to Memphis, to New York. Special, special times. Special times. We've had a lot of different preaching gifts through the years. Many that have come up here through Mount Carmel. And God blessed us in special ways with those preaching gifts. And thankful for Brother John and Brother Danny and those that are desiring to speak in the name of the Lord. And they have been an encouragement and a blessing to me. And we need to continue to pray that God would bless us with gifts of laboring in the church and continue to raise up ministers in special, special ways. I went to only got 10 minutes. This may end up being a series of sermons. There's no way to talk about all the blessings of the Lord in one message, but I'm just going to touch on a few more. I went to a meeting in Cincinnati one year, and it's another way that the Lord spoke to me. Elder Cecil Darty, who had traveled here and preached here many, many times, he didn't drive to preaching appointments because he had a tendency to fall asleep. So he rode the Greyhound bus, and he called it the Gospel Dog. And so he would come up on the Gospel Dog and preach up here, and he'd preach in Cincinnati. And he was 80 years old, and I remember a sermon that he preached that just touched me so profoundly. And the title of the sermon was simply, Missed Opportunities. And he used the verse out of Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. As we therefore have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto those of the household of faith. And I remember hearing that message, and Brother Darty went back over his life, and he looked at his life, and he said, in my life, he said, there have been times that God opened doors for me that I didn't go through. Maybe that I could have encouraged little churches, maybe started up churches, but he said, I was either afraid of what other people would say, what other people would think, what other people would do, or they'd think I had ulterior motives. And he said, Satan discouraged me to not go through doors that God had opened. And I remember hearing that message, and I said, Lord, would you show me the opportunities, if there's opportunities that you would have for me to go through, in your kingdom, in your church. And so that sort of was the framework for my thinking, was to be of the mindset that if God opens a door, I want to be sure and go through it and pray that God would open doors if it was of the Lord. And God began to do it, and he began to use Mount Carmel in doing it in a profound way. We went to Hopewell, New Jersey, and had wonderful meetings there, took busloads of folks up there and had wonderful meetings. And out of that series of services at Hopewell, New Jersey, we didn't know what we were doing. Brother Thomas Mann, Brother Mike Rogers, all we knew to do was have church. We didn't know to make plans to do anything else other than that, make other arrangements going forward. We've learned a little bit through the years. We didn't have the clear vision. And when you're young and you're zealous, in fact, somebody told my mother, a dear brother, said, we hate to tell Brother Stephen this, but we really don't think there's anything that's going to become of his outreach in New Jersey. And I don't know who the we was. I know who the person was that told him. But you know what? I have to tell you, I'm glad they didn't tell me that. If there were some of you that didn't think there was anything that would come of it, I'm glad you didn't tell me. Because all I could see was the opportunities that we had. But out of the work at Hopewell, the church at Southampton started, and they're still having church today. Elder Andy White's preaching there today, and they're still having church today, and God used you in it. Some of you he used even in a... It's amazing how folks can stand back and be critical and other people up there doing the work. I want to tell you, there's some of you here that went up to Southampton that were there on the early days, long before Brother John, you came on the scenes. When you came on the scene, you already had a church building, you had electricity, you had water. It didn't start out that way. When Sister Peggy went up there, Brother Tom, when Brother Ray Evers went up there, they didn't have any heat, they didn't have any water. In fact, when you couldn't even get in through the front door because there was no key to the building. When we found the building, we had to meet the caretaker, and he took a shutter off the window, brought a ladder for us to climb up through the window, and that's how we got into the building that you now go up and have church every Sunday, was we went in there. And you remember the artifacts that were there? There were dead skeletons of animals that were in there. I mean, I'll tell you what, these folks worked hard to make you have a comfortable place. We didn't have running water. No, we did have running water. The running water was getting a water hose and running it over to the Dairy Queen. Well, before that, we ran over to the neighbor's house. And we did that for years, and we'd hook up to their water faucet every Sunday afternoon. And then we didn't know it. The neighbors sold the house. And so we're still going over there to the new neighbors and connecting. And they came out and said, "What are you doing?" And now up there, "What are you doing?" You know how they are up north. And so then we went over to the Dairy Queen, and we tapped into their water for 2 or 3 years. And then finally, we got a well. Didn't have heat. Didn't have air conditioning. All of those things came along. Brother Polk helped and put that all together. But Mount Carmel was a big part of that. Mount Carmel was a part of the work in New York. Yesterday, they had church there. And they've been having it for 10 or 12 years. And some may say, well, nothing's going to become of that, or may critique it, but God is still blessing it. And I remember when John Taylor passed away, I thought that was going to be the end of the work. And I remember sharing with the folks, I was so heartbroken that he was no longer there. And I remember sharing with the folks that were there, just a little handful of folks. And I said, you know, maybe this is the completion of this work. We fulfilled what we had to do, what God put on our hearts to do. John never missed one time in worshiping in 8 years at New York. Not one time. And I have to tell you, for a minister, a pastor, that's a great encouragement. It is. Never missed one time. When he passed away, I thought, maybe the Lord has completed this work here. And I shared that with the folks, the little handful of folks that was there. And when I said that, little Tess Likens, long before she was married, before she had children, she spoke up and she said with a little break in her voice, with a tear in her eye, she said, "Oh, I want you to know, this little gathering means so much to me." She said, "I work in such a oftentimes terrible environment. I'm around a group of people all the time throughout the week that's pretty discouraging. I get pretty disheartened. And she said, there's one place that I can come once or twice a month, and I can know that when I leave, I'm going to be encouraged in the Lord. She said, oh, please don't stop these little meetings up here. It ministers to me. I felt bad. I felt guilty about thinking that maybe God had finished the work there when there's one more of his little sheep that needs to be fed. So New York is still meeting. By the way, they're still meeting in New Mexico. We met in three places in New Mexico: Ruidosa in the mountains, Las Cruces near El Paso, and Albuquerque. And had wonderful services, and they're still meeting up there today. You're part of that. In fact, Brother Tom visited some of the folks out there, and he saw what a blessing. Some of those folks drive 200 miles each way to come to church. That's how hungry they are to hear the gospel preached. I remember we had services up in New Hampshire. Some of you were there. We had services in a motorhome. We had services in Maine, up in Kennebunkport, Gunquit, and North Berwick, Maine. We had services in Pennsylvania, in New Jersey. I remember Brother Compton was over 100 years old, still preaching, and one day he preached in three states, three different services in three different states at over 100 years of age. Now that's encouraging to me. He preached in Maryland, he preached in Pennsylvania, and he preached in New Jersey in one day at over 100 years old. We had services in Las Vegas. A group of folks out there that wanted to hear the gospel preached, and I think they may still be meeting out there. We weren't the beginning of that, but we were able to meet with those folks. There's services at churches in Africa that, because of Mount Carmel, Brother Cook and his communication with them. You say, well, how are we a part of that? Well, through the years, you have held up my arms so that I could go and preach at those places. And I believe that some of you were there personally. Some of you visited Texas. Some of you visited New York. You visited Maine and places like that. But you were there holding up my arms, and I could not have done that had you not been a part of it. So whether you were there in person or not, God used you in the outreaches of those churches. And some of them are still there today. They're still there today. Oh, even the Philippines. I remember going to the Philippines for a couple of weeks, and some of the folks got a little bit concerned. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Philippines, but if you have, it'll really make you thankful for the United States. It really will. And I remember somebody went up to your dad, Brother Mark, and said, well, we're concerned. I mean, there was a group of ministers from the United States moving to the Philippines at that time. And somebody went over to Brother Mark and said, we're concerned Brother Stephen might end up moving to the Philippines. And Brother Mark said, I can assure you, you don't have to worry about that. And he was right. I tell you what, when I got home, I thought to myself, I feel for those dear folks. They are in such poverty-stricken areas, and it will never be any better for most of them. I mean, I feel for them. My heart goes out to them. But I thought, the poorest person I know in the United States is richer than most of those folks with the poverty that they have. And they'll give you the best they have in their food or anything else. They will. I'm thankful there are some churches there, and it was a blessing to me. But I have to tell you, I was thankful to get home. I was so thankful. Your dad was right. Didn't have to worry about it. Didn't have to worry about it. I was blessed. I was blessed in having wonderful fathers in the ministry. I have not been the father in the ministry that I was blessed with in having. I had Elder Afton Richards. If you read The Banner of Love, you know of Brother Afton Richards. He was a wonderful brother. And he was a minister that labored in West Texas and was a man of God and a man of peace. I was blessed with Brother George Johnson. I mean, some men are not blessed with a father in the ministry at all. I was blessed with three. I guess the Lord knew I needed more than just one. But the second was Brother George Johnson. Brother George, wonderful, wonderful pastor and preacher and one to encourage. He used to call Brother Mike and I. We came up together and were ordained together. He would call us his boys. And we enjoyed going and traveling and helping Brother George through the years. He passed away at an early age. He was 64. I'll be 64 my birthday. He gave of himself to the point that he had tons of health problems. The next one that I was blessed to have as a father in the ministry was Elder Compton. And Elder Compton was such a great man, and he himself labored for peace. That when I think of these men, here's the verse that I think of with these three men. I put them in this category. They were great mentors, great examples for me. I will always be thankful for their example. Here it is. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. You'll know them by their actions, by their desire to labor for peace in the Lord's kingdom. I saw that firsthand, and I saw the blessing. And I also saw folks that didn't labor for peace. When I came to Mount Carmel, I didn't know there had been a division in the church. I'm glad I didn't, as I've told you that. I had been around only folks that were laboring for peace. And God put this on my heart, and I still feel this today. And this is the underlying theme of my preaching and my ministry. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Then he says two things here. He says, he maketh me to lie down in green pastures, and he leadeth me beside the still waters. In my understanding, the Lord's church, his band of believers, this is not only what they desire, but what they thrive in. They desire to be able to be laid down in green pastures, and they need to be able to be led by still waters. When you're the pastor of the church, there's a whole lot that you try to handle yourself. My doctor termed it this way, that folks internalize it. That's a term that's used. I know what he's talking about. I know what he is. Because you'll put up with a lot, you'll take a lot, you'll try to handle a lot, so that at the end of the day, that the Lord's people have a place that they can come and they can feast on green pastures and still waters. And it's interesting right here. It's interesting to note that it says, the Lord is my shepherd. He says, he maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. I believe that it's the Lord that desires that environment for his people to feast in. And that if we can come together, let the deacons handle fixing the hot water heater. Let them handle fixing the leak in the roof. Let them handle those things. That doesn't need to be what we trouble ourselves with. We need to be able to come to the house of the Lord and be able to be led by still waters, not troubled waters. I love to go to the ocean. I'm not a swimmer yet. I'm thinking about taking swimming lessons. Now, can you imagine that? Of all things that you all gave me, I don't know who bought it. Do you know, Brother Tom?
On my 25th birthday, not only did you give me a check for $2,500 and told me to take a trip and leave, and Jared keeps telling me, why are you here? I keep thinking you're supposed to be somewhere else. But of all things that you could give me was a check for $2,500. I appreciated that. But a Speedo? Who did that? You know.
I don't know about you, but I lost my train of thought. Oh, I like the ocean, but I don't get too far in it. I'll go just far enough out to baptize. That was one of the highlights that I had, was when we baptized at Southampton, New Jersey, when we went out into the ocean and we baptized Brother Fallon. That was a special, special time to be able to venture out into the ocean. But God put on my heart also when I first came to Mount Carmel, and I preached on this a lot because, and I'll tell you why I preached on it. I'll tell you why. Proverbs 6, verse 16, there are six things the Lord hates. All six of them are important, but the seventh one is super important. It says there are six things the Lord hates. It's important to read all six. I know I'm out of time. I'm going on borrowed time. So I'm borrowing it from the past, not the future. Maybe the future. Six things the Lord hates, yea, seven are an abomination. And he says, this is something I hate. He that soweth discord among the brethren. Now, when I came to Mount Carmel, I was approached by some sister churches. And I remember going to a church and being approached and said, well, if you fellowship with this person, or if you call on this person to pray, then we're not going to fellowship with you. And by the time they got through telling me, I thought to myself, and computers were just coming out, but I thought, I'd need a computer to remember who's in order and who's out of order. Who I can fellowship and who I can't fellowship with. And God put this on my heart, and then he gave me some specific examples. When it says, there are six things the Lord hates, yea, seven are abomination. He that soweth discord among the brethren. If I've even sensed that, I create a little distance. Because it says in Romans chapter 16, it says, mark them which cause divisions and offenses among you and avoid them. It just simply means you don't be mean to them. You just simply give them a little bit of space. You let the Lord take care of it, and the Lord will let the Lord take care of it. Lord says, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. It's not mine, it's not yours, it is the Lord's. The Lord can take care of it. Usually if I try to take care of something, I make it a whole lot worse. I don't know about you, but I make it a lot worse. I could cite some personal examples that I believe I witnessed. I knew of one man that he called up Brother Compton, and he chewed Brother Compton out for being such a peacemaker. And if you're going to get chewed out for something, that's a good thing to be chewed out about. And he said to him, he says, you stay on your side of the Potomac, and I'll stay on my side of the Potomac. And the man that did that, within a month, he thought he had a pull muscle in his shoulder. He dropped dead of a major heart attack at 52 years of age. I know another person that was talking against the Philippine ministry. And I remember telling this particular person, you know, if the Lord is in the matter for that, you better be careful about what you're saying, if the Lord's in the matter. And that person that was talking against this ministry and railing against her pastor in this ministry, that person had a stroke and was never able to say a complete sentence again. I want to tell you something that the Lord put in my heart. He loves his church and he's jealous for his church. And the Lord doesn't take it lightly. I believe that he wants us to have a place to come where we have green pastures. That means a fertile place, a prosperous place, and a place where there's not troubled waters, but still water. And I believe that's the environment that the Lord's people thrive in. And do you know what? Most of the Lord's people want to be in that environment. They do. I've lived long enough to see that I sure want to. And most of the Lord's people want to as well. Well, Brother Mike told me, Mike Rogers, on the way to church this morning, we were talking. He said, there's no way that you can take one message and tell all the folks about all the blessings that Mount Carmel has experienced over the past 32 years. I know Mount Carmel's been blessed for 75, almost 100 years. But those are the ones that I've witnessed personally. Many of our dear friends that we've experienced those blessings with are now with the Lord. They are. But there's many of you that are still here that have experienced those blessings. And I pray that God will bless us to have more. But I love to talk about the blessings of the Lord upon the Lord's church. God bless you.